Hello, and welcome to this next series of podcasts focusing on the music of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. These podcasts are a rebroadcast of a series of programs I did in July 2006 on the anniversary of Mozart's 250th birthday. Now, the figure of Mozart is really quite complex. In the podcast about his symphonies, we talked about his character, because more often than not, we get a glimpse of who Mozart was as a person in many of his symphonies. But in this podcast, and in the next, we look at his final work, that is, the Requiem, the Missa pro Defunctis. Not only was it his last composition, it was the last work that someone commissioned him to write. The program that follows was broadcast in 2006 and is used by permission of 91.5 DZFE, The Master's Touch, broadcast in the Philippines. I hope you enjoy.
Philippine Philharmonic Orchestra Music Director Eugene Castillo joins us to talk about the Requiem of Mozart and the circumstances surrounding its writing.
Ave Verum Corpus is a very significant work because it was written in the last year of Mozart's life. And it's perhaps the most lofty, in terms of theology, works that he ever created. It's very homophonic. It doesn't try to show off anything contrapuntal like Bach would have written or anything like that. But just the simple use of organ accompanied by strings is his first return and in many, many years to writing sacred music after his main patron and who was also his main adversary, the Archbishop of Salzburg, had really stifled him for so long. So he goes off and has this wonderful opera career, which is basically up and down. And he writes quite a bit of social music, and he's never really centered in the theological world until he gets this strange commission to write the Requiem. And I think what's really curious about the Requiem is that we know it was unfinished, and we know that several people claim to have actually been the hand to have completed the work. And in the meantime, there have been people who put together so many different kinds of renditions and performances of it. But indeed, it was the Franz Süssmayr fulfillment or filling out of the lacking and empty parts that most people here in concert halls or have ever heard in their entire lives. But if you've seen the movie Amadeus,
which most people have,
there is fact and there is fiction. And what's really important to get at is that Salieri was never anywhere near.
He was nowhere near.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to take a look at the facts, put the legends aside, and to just go through a laundry list of the facts as we know them, and then to listen to the Requiem up to the point where Mozart, we know, completed, and it puts it in a completely different light.
Well, maybe we can do a little refresher course on the fiction as well. I mean, most of us saw Amadeus. It must have been like years and years ago. Let's see. What was happening in that scene? Mozart was ill.
Mozart was very ill.
He had all the sheets across his blanket in front of him, right?
Yeah.
Salieri was next to him doing this furious scribbling.
Taking dictation.
That's right,
yeah.
Taking dictation.
While on the side of his mind, you know, thinking about how he can steal this or how he can claim it to be his own.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's all not true.
Yeah.
That's Hollywood.
Well, even outside of Hollywood, there have been so many legends surrounding the Requiem.
Legends and so many apocryphal stories that accompany the Requiem, that it's really, really important, I think, to listen to it and to the sections that Mozart truly wrote with the facts in mind, because it puts the Requiem in a completely different light. We have a window, or perhaps maybe a mirror, into the actual soul of the man writing the last composition of his very short 35-year life.
Although, of course, he didn't know it at the time he was writing it.
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was getting iller and iller. But let's just take a look at the facts.
Okay.
We'll remove everything that is Hollywood.
All the speculation.
Mm-hmm. And just try to set things straight for now.
Okay.
So we know that Mozart says to his wife's sister the afternoon before he died, "I have already the taste of death on my tongue." And he was still trying to complete the Requiem, which mm-hmm. was the commission. So here's the background of where the commission came from. It was the 14th of February, Valentine's Day, in the year that he died, 1791, and Countess Walsegg died. And shortly afterwards, an anonymous commission arrived to Mozart's desk in order to memorialize the wife. It was offered in secret, this commission, and in truth, it turns out that Count Walsegg was an amateur composer. Mm-hmm. He had an orchestra in his court, and he wanted to perform it every year on the death anniversary of his wife. So Walsegg intended to pay the commission to Mozart, but pass it off as his own music. And this much is mm-hmm. absolutely true.
Yeah.
So Salieri's nowhere here, as you notice.
Yes, yes.
So late in October of the year 1791, Mozart's mm-hmm. health begins to deteriorate, and we really don't know why. It's like Tchaikovsky's death. We can theorize and speculate all you want, but we're never really going to get to it unless some physician who specializes
or forensic medicine or whatever.
Forensic uh-huh. medicine is going to do it for their lifelong study. So we don't know why his health deteriorates. He never really took care of himself. So he supposedly told Constanza that he didn't have long to live and believed that the Requiem was for himself.
So that much he did actually say. Okay.
That much is true. He was paranoid to a certain degree that he thought that he was writing his own Requiem. Mozart was driven to this kind of madness then, and it mostly due to the fact that he was getting sick, sicker and sicker. And Constanze found that the Requiem on his desk was perhaps contributing to his illness, and she took it away from him and tried to hide it, and it just drove Mozart's health back up the scales. And he improved just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And so he becomes cheerful and starts working on his Requiem again, and he gets sick. On his deathbed, Süssmayr, his name is Franz Süssmayr, and he was a pupil of Mozart, whose talents Mozart held in very low esteem.
Okay, so why was he sticking around?
Süssmayr was basically kind of a coat tailor.
Mm.
He liked to try to hang around Mozart. Basically the only person mm-hmm. that was around that could assist him in writing down the music on mm-hmm. his deathbed. Mozart's only desire was to share his overall format for the Requiem with any kind of musician at all. And it was just that Franz Süssmayr happened to be
very conveniently.
A few close friends, Süssmayr and Mozart, gather around by his bedside to sing through what he had already completed. So this part of the movie is indeed true. And Mozart himself sung the alto line. And in the Lacrimosa, which translates as the tears of that day, Mozart does indeed gets caught up in tears and mm-hmm. gets choked up. He can't continue singing. Mozart was not able to complete writing the entire vocal lines. Only two or three movements were completed in their entirety, and scattered notes all over the place. And it was Josef Ebler who was asked by Constanza after Mozart's death to finish the Requiem, basically because she needed to pay off all of the debt that Mozart accumulated his entire life.
And she needed to collect the commission.
And he really left her in quite a financial situation. But Ebler was too busy and he declined. And several other musicians were approached before settling for Süssmayr. And he was the last person. As mm-hmm. one would listen to, say, the movement, the Confortatis movement,
mm-hmm.
and then listen to something like what Süssmayr completed later on in the Offertorio or in the Sanctus,
mm-hmm.
you're going to hear a different composer. Very, very much so. It's not the same psychological person who's been writing that. So he finished the work anyway, and it was, let's just call it, inadequate. It would have gotten a D in first semester harmony.
Mm-hmm.
Mozart's Requiem, then, was first performed February 14th in 1793, 2 years after his death. And it was Count Wolsey who conducted the performance. He could not counter the challenge that it was not his own composition, because people started talking.
Okay.
And the interest in Mozart's final work began many years after he'd been long dead. So all of these subsequent versions or editions or attempts to complete the Requiem were made, and basically all they are attempts. I think that the purest way to get a sense of the genius and mastery of Mozart is to listen to what he did write and complete and sketch, and point out what is unique and so special about it. Mm-hmm. You don't hear it in any other movement.
Let's begin.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, what's very, very interesting about the introit, the very first movement of the Requiem, "Eternal rest grant unto them, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon them," are several things. First of all, we know that Mozart studied quite a bit of Bach.
Yes.
In the last year of life. And if one is familiar with the Passions of Bach, then many instances Bach uses this pounding effect to simulate the way of the cross or the crucifixion. Even in Bach's B minor mass, the crucifixus movement has this hammering effect with going on in the passacaglia bass line. And so one of the things, features of this introit, is that sense of heaviness in the bass line.
Like a sort of plodding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very much looking back towards the Passions of Bach.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
or
yes,
the crucifixus of the B minor mass. And so that's one thing. The second thing is that the sudden appearance of a solo soprano on the words "light eternal," when you think about it, it seems so natural. But when you actually wonder why suddenly a solo soprano comes in on "light eternal," it's as if the angels just suddenly appeared and guaranteed entrance into paradise. Those, I think, are at least two things to hang on to as we listen to this movement of Mozart's real Requiem.
Oh,
that is very powerful music so far, mm-hmm. and very much Mozart. It is quite spiritual, and we have a very, very clear understanding that whatever went on before in his relationship with theology and with the church as an institution,
mm-hmm.
because of his employment with earlier in his career with the Archbishop of Salzburg, that this is clearly a man who hung on to spirituality and made it something of his own and had something to say about it and translated mm-hmm. it into the music. When he gets to the next section, the Kyrie, Lord have mercy, there is definitely a link to both the music of Bach and of Handel because of these very, very long melismatic lines. Melismatic means many, many notes per syllable. And that's one of the features of this Kyrie that the Requiem has, that these melismas really seem to spiral up to heaven. They seem to spiral up just the way a lot of the Baroque architecture did in the time before, architectural time before Mozart's time of life. And it is kind of, in a way, looking back into the past.
Here you have a very classical, the most classical of composers, and he's looking back at all this Baroque guilt and architecture. It's really quite amazing considering it's, 1791?
Absolutely. And so he does make a strong attribute to Handel and to Johann Sebastian Bach. So that's the framework which we must listen to the Kyrie. Then begins the so-called sequence, which is a very, very lengthy poem sung or read before the gospel at the Mass for the Dead, at the Requiem Mass. And as does almost every other composer before him, Mozart takes it into pieces. It's just much too long, and there are too many topics to keep it into one, what's called a through-composed composition. I can't think at this moment of any one composer that has approached the sequence, the Day of Wrath, Day of Anger, Day of Wrath sequence without interrupting it and starting new music. Mm-hmm. So it is a multi-movement sequence, first of all, and he deals with it very, very interestingly. The first thing I have to say is that there's a performance practice because of the relationship of the key from which the Kyrie ends and the key in which the Dies Irae begins is the same. For some strange reason, tendency in modern performances to do a quick, what we call in music, attacca, or mm-hmm. a quick entrance right directly into the Dies Irae. And I think that's foolish. I mean, you sort of really need to separate what has been churchly, what has been basically a quotation of the melismatic music of and contrapuntal music of Bach, and let it rest for a little while, because when he takes up the Dies Irae, he's writing as an opera composer.
Okay. Oh, so you're saying it's not the attacca, it's the pause.
Yes. What needs to really happen is in very few performances you get a chance to
just breathe.
Catch your breath.
That's right.
You really need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was never really meant to be functional church music. In theory, can and has in the past been used as functional church music, but that's not the way that Mozart approached writing his Requiem.
Mm-hmm.
So as such, that kind of immediate attack, immediate embarkation into the Dies Irae really doesn't make any sense. As an audience member, you have to have time to enjoy the fact that the pleas for mercy to God have spiraled up to heaven, and you just sort of let that dissipate. And then you begin what is Mozart's specialty at this point in his life, writing as an opera composer. So he sets the text, day of anger, day of wrath, and what we hear is very much from the turmoil that he creates in the opera Don Giovanni.
Don Giovanni. Mm-hmm.
So let's listen to that at this point. Very dramatic music, and it seems to be cut off very, very quickly, too.
That's right.
It's very brief. It's a very brief movement, not even 2 minutes long. The second section is the sound of the trumpet, who is going to herald the day of reckoning. Tuba mirum are the Latin words. And what's curious about this is the fact that he uses a trombone. Now, trombones, at this time in music history, were used as accompaniment instruments from the church to the graveside.
Okay.
Because you obviously could not transport the organ. And so trombones became associated, particularly in Vienna, with the sound and the feeling of funereal procession. So what does he do? He makes the trombone play one of the most difficult passages ever written for a trombone, even to this day. And every trombone player in history worldwide practices this particular excerpt because it shows quite a bit of their expertise in the instrument. And then you hear the sound of the solo bass voice or the baritone voice coming in at the words of the tuba mirum, the trumpet sounds. So that's, I think, a departure, and it's written in very much the style of an aria, not the same kind of ferocity we heard in the previous movement.
Mm-hmm.
We are contemplating the Requiem of Mozart with Philippine Philharmonic Orchestra music director Eugene Castillo. I'm Tiffany, and you are listening to a celebration of Mozart's sacred music on our anniversary series on DZFE, Amazing Amadei. Stay with us.